Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
It's Wednesday night. You know what that means. Mark Order Podcast in the house. We got Callie Joe here. We got No Ryan, who has actually, in a shocking turn of events, he made himself sick earlier in this week. He said he caught a stomach virus, but I think he was just like, oh, my own jokes, oh, my own singing. So he's feeling better now. He was at the Flyers game, but either way, he's not here. Joe is here. I'm here. The sky is falling in because I was entertained by Chris Jericho tonight. So we're going to talk about all that and more in a little bit. But thank you to Taylor Cannon. Thank you to Pieces in the chat for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Stay tuned. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of shifting here as the holidays come up. I notoriously am never here the day before Thanksgiving, but this is the episode that the C2 is going to get revealed. So much to talk about there, but we will keep you posted, and I will be at the pay-per-view this weekend at Full Gear. This was the go-home episode to such a thing. It felt like a go-home episode to such a thing. It is a very, very full card. I actually think that maybe Chris and Sheeta might have been like match of the night tonight. I think the main event delivered some cool stuff too, but nice to see Sheeta back in action tonight, but very, very go homey. But back in his own home after his big California trip is our dear Joe. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm adjusting now back to my time zone. The 2 hour, you know, West Coast time really messes with you. I forgot. I'm going to go by L.A. Joe. That's going to be my new thing, but, you know, I feel like it's a little too close to someone else to go by L.A. something.
Yeah. Yep. I can understand that. How was your trip? How was going to, you were in L.A. proper, right?
Yes, I was, down by the LAX, and then kind of over by USC, the South Central, then the bus tour that SJ had recommended, our friend SJ.
Hell yeah. We love SJ around here.
Did a lot of things. Got a lot of steps in. So had a weird Uber ride. So yeah, it was fun.
We're going to talk about weird Uber rides, because I had so many weird Uber rides when I was in LA. When my sister first moved to LA before she moved back to New York, because we are not West Coasters. Her least of all. Before she got a car, we were taking Ubers and Lyfts wherever we needed to go. She had moved out there without a car. She moved from New York. And we had so many fucking weird Uber rides. And not in the way that like makes you feel uncomfortable as a woman. Like it wasn't like weird, like a lawsuit weird. It was like, are the people that drive Ubers out here aliens? Like, what's going on? So tell me about your Uber experience, because I also had that happen in LA several times.
My driver wasn't an alien. He was British.
Same thing. Weirdos.
Trying to leave the LA Coliseum, which was a nightmare because everyone else was trying to leave at the same time. Staying on in the rideshare area, trying to wait for your rideshare. Having multiple ones cancel on you, have one guy have someone call you because they don't speak English and ended up parking two blocks away from you. I finally got this one guy come get me, and he pulls up and he's like, How much did Lyft charge you for this ride? I'm like, I don't know, $60? I'm like, well, do you mind if you cancel it and you just pay me directly the money? Because driving you an hour away is not going to be worth my time of $40 and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, sure. I don't care. I'll pay you, like, whatever. Just get me out of here.
Take me where the fuck I need to go at this point.
Kill me. and get me back to my hotel. Anyhow, his whole life story about how he moved from London to America from the American dream of living in L.A. and living in poverty for a while, you know?
Of course, yeah. Did he call you Brother at any point?
No, he had a record label at one time, which failed.
Ooh, okay. Failed.
He had multiple investments over the years where he became a multimillionaire and then lost it all.
Damn. Sometimes I feel like you just gotta cash out when you're at the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I asked him, like, what did you learn? And, like, I know I did wrong every time. I still do it. I'm like, okay.
Just actively not learning from your mistakes. Love that for him.
Sometimes, but yeah, it was a whole interesting conversation that we had about economics, West Coast life versus Midwest life. Yeah, everything.
Did you talk to him about Zack Sabre Jr. for an hour, like I would have, or no?
No, I should have. I'm like, let me tell you about TMDK. And you heard their theme song. It's a banger.
I am not kidding. I'm out here helping sell Mass Lines tickets, okay? The composer of that band. What was it?
I just assume you're a plant. I just assume that you're, you know.
I'm getting a commission off of their $8 tickets at this upcoming show that they have in London on December 4th. So if you're listening, go to it. But I do have some friends from Wrestle Purists and extensions of Wrestle Purists that are very much integrated into the independent scene and very much Zack Sabre Jr. fans. And they also love Mass Lines. And they were like, holy shit, we're going. And I was like, fuck yeah. I will be jealous in spirit. One of them was so sweet. She was like, we'll call you. We'll call you. I'm like, it's going to be 5 a.m. my time, probably. Please do not. Please not call me. But I guess they're 5 hours ahead of us. Oh, yeah. So a little mid-afternoon call could go a long way. I could rock out to some punk music then. But thank you guys for filing in. There's more of you now than there were earlier. We got Scott George here, Tim McFowell. Thank you, guys. Thank you. I was like, who's that? It was just
how are you, Kate? Since I care about you and I want to focus on Kate here since Ryan's not here.
Well, Ryan isn't here, so this is an opportunity to end the show earlier. And I've had a very long week, so I won't dive too much into it. But I've been like a hybrid of like reasonable anxious mess, nothing detrimental, just like I have anxiety disorders, so it doesn't take a lot to necessarily make my body feel anxious even when everything is really okay. But I also just have been cranky. So I've been just like a real blast out with this week. Mostly I've been keeping to myself for that reason, but just like one of those weeks where it'll be like, I don't know, you can drop your toothpaste on the floor and you're just like, everything in the world is terrible. Like it just is one of those where it's like there's some magnifying glass over things, but in reality, which if I can just keep my head there, everything will be good. Things are fine. My apartment is really coming along. I have my new setup. My internet is working for the most part. Like things are good. Things are moving along, but so that's been really refreshing. My dad rules. He came down earlier this week and helped me with some stuff, so that part is good, and I have a lot to look forward to this weekend, so hoping that'll bust me out of this little mini rut I've been in. But yeah, if we're being so real, it's been a dumb week, partly because I have an anxiety disorder and partly because I've just been in a bad mood. It happens.
You ride the ebbs and flows of it, right? So
we do, and honestly, like there is a part of me that I'm like, I'm just burnt out on wrestling, I think, as well. Like I just need, I'm very thankful that there's a couple weekends in a row without pay-per-views or PLEs, like on the WWE side. Cause I've been like finding myself needing to catch my breath. I have to proactively work some breaks in there too, because they don't come naturally. And I also like do other things at Fightful that are not on air, like I help with sponsorships and we're planning the award show over there. So I love to just impose stress on myself and create new stresses for myself.
Well,
that are not urgent.
I'll add that you've also been creating a lot more content now with your YouTube channel.
I have, thank you so much for the plug, but I will say that's mostly been fun stuff. The Five Things series that I did requires a little bit more thought and analysis, because it's been, if you haven't watched it, fucking support me, first of all. But those videos were five things that I think WWE could do better at, and five things that AEW could do better at. And then at the end of the month, I'm going to do five things that I think both companies are doing very well. And then I did a fun video that required a lot of production. And then tomorrow I was like, I'm going to just do my thoughts on this BattleBots tournament, because BattleBots tour that was recorded in Las Vegas. So I was like, that will be low production and really fun to talk about. So looking forward to that. Like, the first videos, one was fun. It was just like fictional places that people told me they wanted to see wrestling. It required like a lot of stuff to kind of go on the back end, put together. And then the other ones were more serious, but way easier to produce. And this one I was like, this is going to be goofy and easy. So I'll take that this week. I'll take that this week. But so on stuff, since we're talking about my channel, I'll plug up. Got some fun interviews coming up. I'm waiting for confirmations on those. But I will have a press from highlights that we can also throw up on this channel. If we do, am I sounding choppy? Is the internet being stupid? I can switch to my old setup if we need. Let me try and
choppy.
This is the kind of week I'm having. I'm not. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
sometimes.
Maybe.
Yeah, but no. There was
a little bit. It's here, miss. You talked about how great your internet is and everything else, and then this happens. I can't hear you. Nope, now it's muted. I blame Ryan. Ryan's gone, and he just curses the show. But anyhow, I think the gist was Kate was telling people to follow her on her socials and her YouTube channel to watch all the content she had coming up.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, no. Yes.
I just apply a whole other setup. The one thing that I have to do is so close to having a fully functioning office and studio, but the one thing that's left to do is I got like Verizon business internet for my office because Verizon Home wasn't available. But when I went to set it up, there's a whole Verizon setup in my apartment from the people who had it before me because it used to be available. So I was like, can they just run that service? Like, the setup is already there. I'm sure it's old coax, but they were like, we're just going to send you a tech to figure out what's going on. And I was like, they also have the whole backstory on how terrible my Optimum was. So they were like, why don't we just send someone so they're set up right? So we're getting close. We're getting close to being fully functioning, but holy fuck, I cannot wait to ditch Optimum. I really, really can't. The absolute pit. But I'll tell you what else I can't wait for, and that's AEW Full Gear. And we're going to talk all about this go-home episode. The only thing really to cover beforehand, and I think we glanced about on this last week a little bit, but you weren't here. So Speedball Mike Bailey coming into the fold in AEW, it looks like. There was some confusion about when his contract was actually up, some confusion about when he'd be showing up in AEW. Other outlets had reported he'd be there for the C2, but Fightful Select had reported that his contract at TNA is up at the end of the year. He's just been allowed to talk to other companies in the process, and it looks like he's going to be coming into AEW. So
probably not a Continental Classic go-to. It would be cool if they just let them do it, because TNA will let you work anywhere anyway. But Speedball feels like a no-brainer for AEW. I know NXT had interest in him too, but to me, fits his landscape better, lets him keep those other interpromotional relationships alive in that he was doing work with New Japan and all these other places, right? So some good stuff there. Your thoughts on Speedball joining the fray?
Yeah, it makes the most sense to me to go to AEW. And if ROH ever have some legs under it, it'd be great to have him be one of the, you know, top guys in that promotion if it gets a TV deal. But
Boy, would it. It does sound like it's headed that way, but he feels like such a natural fit for that particular product, to your point. So good stuff there, but we're going to switch it up this time. We're going to kind of just plow through. You know about the great shows on the Shining Wizards Network. The only thing that I will say is to join them for their 13th anniversary episode next week. Kudos to them. There are not many things that have been in my life for 13 years that I have been consistent about, except my heartbreak for Yankee fandom at this point, I think, is well beyond 13 years. So some good stuff there. But support the Shining Wizards Network at Wizards Podcast. Wish Matt a happy birthday, too. His is coming up. A lot of people will be out celebrating tomorrow for that. So some good stuff with Matt at the Shining Wizards Podcast. But support them. Check out the shows on the Shining Wizards Network. You know where to find it. You know where to find our t-shirts as well. We're going to dive headfirst into this episode of AEW Dynamite. And Joe, it felt very go-homey. Not bad go-homey necessarily. I still think we're trending in the right direction with a lot of stuff with AEW. But just go-homey, right? You can only do so much storyline advancement on a show when you have a pay-per-view coming up with blow-offs for like 14 different stories that are going on. So how did you feel about tonight's episode overall, and more importantly, your thoughts on the Rizzler, who will be at ringside with the ring bell?
I thought it was, for me, it was probably about 2.5, 3 out of 4 type of AEW Dynamite. We still got some good matches, which we said the Statlander and Sheeta match was great. We had the Darby and Claudio match was fun. We had the OC and Wheeler match. So I mean, we had some good matches that actually had clean finishes, which I was kind of surprised by.
Me too, especially Darby and Claudio. That one really surprised me.
So I think those helps make it a little bit better than just a simple go-home show where it's a bunch of no finishes and promos.
Agreed.
And then the Rizzler stuff. I know nothing about Costco guys. Like, I'm here and there, but like, I've never watched any of their stuff.
So all I know is the boom thing. And I know that the Rizzler exists. I know nothing else. But let's dive in, guys. Chat along with us. We appreciate you so much. We'll ask you to leave a thumbs up on this video as well. And if you listen in podcast form, or even if you don't, give us a 5-star review. It's very, very helpful. Very, very helpful when you guys boost us a little bit with your love there. But we do start off with this wild, wild, ultra all-star mega tag. I got to say right off the bat that Matt Menard is not the solution to commentary while Taz is out. Like, and it's not even that he's doing anything wrong. Their chemistry is just very, very stilted. In my opinion, I think the problem is Matt Menard works great with Taz, and Taz is the guy that's out. We kind of talked about that a couple of weeks ago, but this commentary desk not doing it for me, and that's not just because I'm a Nigel Stan account at the end of the day. But, like, do you feel the same way I do where it just, there's not even anything he's doing wrong. It doesn't click. It's not feeling loose and good over there.
Right. There's still a little, the flow's still not there after a few weeks. And then a couple of things is one, intermittent times he had some good things to add. Sometimes he sits there and makes sound effects where he's like, oh, and watch out and look at this. And it's like, that's not, I want a little bit more analysis from him from being a wrestler and like helping give some more insight, which I know he can.
Yeah.
And then also later on in the night when they show him and Garcia kidnap Jack, I'm like, how are we letting Matt Menard just come back to the announce table like nothing happened? Like,
yeah.
For kidnapping and almost like killing a guy?
Because it was such like a violent crime, it did feel really weird that he was just back at work on the table. Like that felt very odd. I'm very, very much in agreement with you there, but I am excited to see that we are starting shows with wrestling again. We get Ricochet, who gets a fancy entrance. Great theme for him. But him, Powerhouse Hobbs, Mark Davis, and Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, Lance Archer, and Brian Cage, who I only remembered was the ROH champion about three quarters, or TV champion about three quarters of the way through this show. I had to go back and edit that back into my notes, but this was a lot of fun. This is almost like a hallmark of the go-homes, is you're going to have like an eight-man with different alliances, but some really, really good emotional investment spots, I feel like, from Fletcher and Ospreay in particular. Like, this is, I think, going to be a real show stealer. But the Don Callis family getting the win here, hitting Blade, but Will Ospreay missing and hitting Davis. And then that overdrive knee by Takeshita. I think that's the right call. I think Takeshita getting the pin is the way to go on that. I think it makes things with Mark Davis a little bit more interesting that him and Will Ospreay had some miscommunication, but some fantastic in-ring here. Really nice to see Mark Davis back in action. I do really like that they didn't just go, okay, and now Kyle Fletcher's in the tag team again, or he didn't change at all while Mark Davis was out. He's a completely different guy, and they picked that up right away, which I think is good. Mark Davis, an underrated aspect to what Aussie Open was because Kyle Fletcher is such a star, but I had a whole bunch of fun watching this. Like, there was a lot of really good movements in this. Hobbs also getting taken to the back, which I don't know if that was an angle or real. I do know that it apparently was not all that serious. He was walking around backstage, which is good news. But fun opener. I like opening with wrestling. It's nice to see them getting back into the AEW that we know and love, I felt like.
Well, we technically opened up with the November Rain video package.
That's, oh my gosh, how could I forget? You know what it was? I wasn't paying attention to it, one, because I'd already seen it, and two, because I was walking Daphne. So it was a video package on a very small screen that I was watching at the time, too. So shame on me. Yes, we did start off with not wrestling, but an eight-minute anthem or whatever it is, and then wrestling.
Which was really very well done. I thought I watched it earlier today, too. I'm like, it was great. Get your money's worth out of that song.
Oh, know? Yeah.
But yeah, I liked the match a lot. I thought it's a good way of keeping a lot of these guys occupied while away from the title scenes. And, you know, you have Ricochet, who was hot for a while. You know, Ospreay's always being in a title mix. But I also really thought that it was nice to kind of reintroduce Davis and Hobbs in this kind of multiple man match where they're not relied to do singles matches right away, but you can kind of work with people. So I think it was a good way for them to reintroduce them, to show off what they can do. I also had in my notes that Hobbs kind of did the whole Willis Reed, get injured, go to the locker room, come back to your team. I thought he was going to come back and get the win after the whole injury thing. But having Takeshita win was a good move. And at the same time, you kind of sow that seed of is there not dissension among Davis and Ospreay going forward.
Yeah, I think that'll be a nice program probably going into that February show in Australia for sure. Definitely a key Australian talent that you're going to want to have highlighted, and which way that goes I think will be very interesting. But I just want to say, hi, Jesse Ozog. Nobody here to bully you today because Ryan's not here, which is great. Hi also to Kylie and the rest of you filing in here. We appreciate you. hopping on over here, giving us your support. But a good opening match. I liked the ending a lot. I think Will Ospreay is inevitable. So I don't know what that looks like. Like, if we're talking about he's so inevitable, it's in a couple years from now. I don't know if he's the guy to step up and take it off Moxley. Like, we will see. That feels like it's Darby's spot, but if Darby wants to go climb Everest, who the hell knows?
One more note I had was, the more I see Fletcher with his new, like, short hair stuff, the more I think it's a bad decision. I don't, it's not for me. I thought Fletcher looked better with, you know, more straggly hair.
Somebody called him Randy Orton, and I thought that was about the funniest thing I've ever heard.
My note was, he looks like if Randy Orton and The Miz had a baby.
I can see it.
He has to kind of build Randy, but he has some facial features of The Miz, where he, some of his characteristics and mannerisms in his face.
And he's awesome. So
I thought he was awesome. What?
Awesome. Narsome. He is going to be outstanding. I'm with you. I think he pulls off the look. I like the other look better. Like, I don't think he looks bad with it. I just think he could go the other way. But we will move along here to Jon Moxley and the Death Riders. They are in the back saying that Orange is a threat to Jon and his people, and so he must be destroyed come on Saturday. And Claudio, I don't know what he said in Swiss, but it sounded cool as fuck. And that guy needs a singles title at some point, but he says he's going to destroy Darby. And then we toss it over to Darby, who says every single Death Rider will have their day. And today is Claudio's day. So, I have had this thing, and this is what makes me think maybe I'm just burnt out on wrestling a little bit. I feel like something about these isn't working, and it's so frustrating because I can't actually tell you what it is. I think there was something missing last week where Jon Moxley was taking over TBS and he was just talking backstage again, right? He didn't actually take over anything. He wasn't rooting production trucks or hacking into systems or anything like that. There's also something weird about this call and response format when they're not in the same room. To, like, have somebody responding in a different stairwell just feels kind of fucking weird. So I don't like that they're responding to each other. Like, it's a direct response to a pre-tape. But right now, like, there's just something that's not clicking about it. And a lot of it is presented this way. A lot of it. I feel like the only things that feel inspired in presentation right now are the stuff that they're doing with Swerve and the Hurt Business. I would also throw Jay White and Hangman into that picture because there was some really good stuff. I mean, everything Hangman's doing is brilliant, but the way that that feud started with that brilliant finish where Jay White was just cagey and smart, there's a lot of stuff that just feels really fucking redundant on the show right now. A lot of people who, are they turning on their friends? A lot of people who love or hate AEW that are on the show. So these, like, there was nothing wrong with these. I just didn't feel like, oh, I'm fucking psyched to see. I ended up being very excited for Claudio and Darby. That match was super fun. But these promos, like, I'm like, okay, Jon Moxley's going to kick Orange Cassidy's ass. That's new and neat. Like, I don't feel like things have been advancing, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I felt that kind of way too, because I think it was really, you know, really hot initially. People were like, oh, what are they doing? Who's the, you know, this quote unquote higher power type of person? And then the more we got into it, it's like, oh, it's just Moxley and them. They're kind of, you know, changed their business model of how they go about things. And we're kind of in this holding pattern of, we don't think Orange is going to beat Moxley. So that's what happens after that. Like, What are we trying to get to? You know, where do the Bucks come in at this? Or do they play a part in this? And I feel like we're kind of in that holding pattern of until, you know, January or February, whatever the next pay-per-view is.
Sure. Well, we have World's End at the end of December in Orlando. And then to your point, yeah, I think is Grand Slam, I think, before Revolution, the Australia show. Yeah. So I'm with you that there's a lot of things that just feel kind of predictable too. And that's like Orange Cassidy isn't going to beat Jon Moxley probably, right? So I do think we're probably going to have Daniel Garcia. And I think those mid-card champions being freshened up with Takeshita and him is a very, very good thing. We're going to talk about the Daniel Garcia stuff because I actually thought that that ruled. But we come back with Renee Paquette, who meets the Hurt Business or the Hurt Syndicate in the parking lot. Very brave of Renee. She's many, many things to this wrestling world. The most notable in this being that she was willing to go into a wrestling parking lot with no help or security, to my knowledge, and to see people. But it's MVP Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. And then Swerve comes in with a chain and kind of cheap shots him. And I still have mixed feelings about this because I like it in that I thought it was effective. I thought the camera angles were cool. I thought it was well done. I feel like it's Swerve trying to even the score, but he's clearly the babyface in this. So for him to get in a cheap shot feels kind of weird. But man, MVP's been such a home run since they've come over. Lashley, it's been about a year now. Okay. If you come out in that suit, I'm going to be asking for more suits. I just want one. I will get it tailored to my size because Lord knows I'm not made out of granite like Bobby Lashley. But I just want one little suit. I feel like that's not that much to ask for. But looking to the nines, I can't get over how easy the cadence around everything MVP says is. Like, it all just sounds very natural. His motivations have been crystal clear from the second he showed up at Grand Slam. Really, really, really good stuff. And Bobby Lashley, like, we've known the star was in him. We got flashes of it in WWE. They didn't really follow through on it all that much. But, like, he's just fucking cool, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, when you let get out of the way and like let them do what they're good at and stop trying to, you know, handcuff them into something that they're not, give them a little bit of creative freedom. They can get themselves over. They can get a storyline hot. I mean, and yeah, God bless Renee. I mean, she keeps almost getting hit, whether it's by Heyman 1 week or by Swerve, two guys who are both very deranged at times.
Yeah. She's covering up Harley and Mina's boobs at any given time. She's just trying to like stop the boob shaking at some point before it gets out of hand.
I don't understand, I guess, the motivation yet behind Swerve's, like, why, how he got into this whole kind of like unhinged portion of Swerve, which I like the character of him when he's just a little bit more vicious, but I don't understand the motivation of what got him to that level already with Bobby. But I get when he went to that level with Heyman, it got personal. But this doesn't feel as personal with the Hurt Syndicate yet.
I feel like Swerve could have used one more thing, kind of putting a punctuation point on that. It does feel like the story that they're trying to tell, I think, is like he was so banged up from that war with Hangman Page, right? And then here comes Bobby Lashley like, and the Hurt Syndicate, these other ass kickers who are extremely intentional and tactical in the way that they hurt people. So I feel like they're trying to walk the line of Swerve is trying to level the playing field, but they don't want him to look pathetic and desperate. You know what I mean? So it's not like, I'm grasping at straws. I'm going to hit you with the chain because payback's a bitch. So I don't know if it's the same level of violence and viciousness, but I agree with you that there could have been like a little bit clearer of a line drawn around why a babyface is kind of acting like that, right? Because a chain is not like, and I slapped you with my glove kind of thing. Like, that's some real deal shit. So I think the other part of why I've been a little burnt out at AEW stuff, Joe, is talk. Even when there's great wrestling, which there was some really great wrestling tonight, sometimes just so many segments. And this was a good example where we like jump from one to the next to the next. And those call and response things that I was saying, like, it just gets really fucking crowded on here. But we do move on immediately to Adam Cole, baby, who still has some Tanner issues that he needs to work out because he looks jaundiced. But he says he's not getting his hands on MJF, but he knows that Roddy Strong is and that they have the same goal of beating the dog shit out of MJF, which was all good stuff. And Kyle O'Reilly comes out to cut him off. And he basically just says, like, I don't want to see you become so obsessed with MJF that you self-destruct. You already have, like, a completely reconstructed ankle. You should just let it go. Like, if Roddy can't get it done, don't obsess over it. Just, like, move on, because MJF is more evil than you, and that's a good thing. And Adam Cole is just kind of perplexed. My summary of all that is pretty clean and logical and makes sense. I don't know what got lost in the execution for me, but this did not feel like two old friends that have known each other forever. There was just, I don't know, the crowd sucked tonight a little bit. I don't know if it's because it's a go home, but everything just kind of was like a little, it was like they just met. It was not like they had been friends for years and had this rich wrestling history that they were alluding to. But on the other hand, Kyle O'Reilly is perfect and I love him so much. So it is what it is.
You know, Adam didn't seem to have as much tanning issues before he moved back to Pennsylvania.
That's a good point.
Maybe his honey mustard glow is more of a like Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, yellow gold color.
It could be. It could be reflected off of their 8-2 record right now. Mm-hmm.
Yep. This promo with him and Emo Kyle was it was interesting because I felt like tonight they really went hard on introducing this whole aspect of their story of, you know, why people do things for Adam Cole, like why, like MJF later on had a promo about, you know, Roddy stepping up and putting himself in the line of fire for Adam Cole, and Kyle talking about, you know, he didn't want to see people get hurt. So I'm really interested in this whole, like, this, why people have these allegiances to Adam and keep doing things for him, and if, how that's going to make him feel guilty if people get hurt. But at the same time, we're acting like Roddy shouldn't want to beat up MJF from the start. I'm like, he was in on the whole devil thing. Like, he should want to be MJF for himself.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like, because that's kind of what Adam Cole said, right? Like, that was my goal. Roddy has the same goal. We're on the same page. And I think they kind of alluded to that a couple weeks ago. But if we're supposed to believe it was in service of the devil, that was Adam Cole, right? So I get the consistency of carrying that over. I want the fight to feel like it's between them, especially after what we get later, where MJF basically pulls up to a trailer park in his gorgeous green car and says that Roddy grew up trailer trash. He watched his dad shoot his mom. He's from a broken family, and his desperation for a sense of family is why he's so loyal to Adam Cole. And Roddy returns with a promo after basically saying, that is my background. I'm proud of it. I'm proud I emerged from that. And those things made me capable of kicking your ass. So we do have this other chapter unfolding with it that I think is good. And that part of it feels a little rushed to me in a sense. I think it's hard to, and to their credit, like, it's hard to build out an angle when somebody's not on the show. Like, it's hard to have, like, this actually worked a lot better for me than him sitting around watching the matches or him getting a massage and talking to the camera, because this felt like he brought a camera because he wanted to make a point and say something. So I liked that better. I know at the pay-per-view, these two are going to beat the dog shit out of each other. So that's the part I'm looking forward to the most. I think Roddy's been I don't want to say underrated because I think a lot of people have actually recognized it, but one of the most reliable workhorses they've had in ring since they got away from the goofy stuff. The only thing that guy has done is deliver. So are you excited for this match? And what did you think of the rest of the way the storyline unfolded tonight?
I am. I think from a wrestling standpoint, you said Roddy and MJF, they'll go in the ring. I think they're both pretty good with their technicians. I'm interested to see how it plays out. I mean, MJF's going to win, but I'm interested to see what happens after the match and during the match that propels the story a little bit more, whether it's initially people thought maybe it's Ryan and Taven and Bennett who are going to turn on Matt on Adam Cole, but a part of me now thinks maybe it's Taven and Bennett who turn on Roddy and they side with Matt, and then you have Kyle and Roddy and Adam join up again. But so that's kind of intriguing to me to see. And I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad MJF had the promo later on the show to kind of, it was a good go-home promo for him to make it a little bit more serious and not so in his palatial estate getting massaged and not taking things seriously. And I think it ramped up a little bit more each week from, having Takeshita use the ring to beat Roddy, right? And then to now. So I think he's getting a little bit more serious now that he got closer. So that's been good.
Yeah, I agree. I think that and I actually like comedic MJF a lot more than a lot of people do, but I like, this is his wheelhouse, I feel like. And Roddy is so hard-hitting and violent in the ring that him getting more serious the closer we get to this match is, it kind of warrants it because he beats the fuck out of people. So you need him to feel like he has a reason to. And I think going after his familial history is a pretty good way to go about that. We're moving through with this episode of Dynamite. We are foot on the gas today. We got no breaks, no intermissions. We're not running from the grind. So please leave a thumbs up on this video if you didn't catch us earlier in the show asking you to do that. And also leave a 5-star review on audio platforms if you listen to us there, or even if you don't, head over to all of them. Head over to MySpace and leave us a 5-star review there. Go on angelfire.com and leave a positive review of the show in written form. Your live journal, be like, dear journal, guess what? I listened to the Mark Order podcast and it was so great today. And it's so much better when Ryan's not around. And I feel safe from bad jokes and from shitty songs when he misses episodes.
Could you imagine with Wicked coming on, like in the movie screens this week, how much you would have been just singing?
Don't make him think. Don't even plant the seed of the idea, or he's going to be thinking he's Ariana Grande out here, and I hate that. Peace is saying, make a GeoCities site praising the podcast. You get it. Scott George saying, I left a review on GeoCities. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. I think the SEO for GeoCities is probably the strongest of the game. So I wonder if it's still a thing. A thing.
I don't know. Let me ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves. Head over to Alta Vista. Take a little search around the world for it.
I'm waiting for my Netscape browser to load.
Oh, the worst. The worst. I'll put up an away message later and we'll figure it out. But we move on here in this episode. We have to find my notes. And where we left off, I believe it was with the women's match here. Yes, it was. And this conglomeration promo. Very upset that later in the show, I'm amused by Jericho with the conglomeration here. But Orange Cassidy says he's going to make an example out of Wheeler Yuta and do the same to John at Full Gear. The conglomeration shows up and Mark Briscoe says that they all have his back, and Orange Cassidy's like, no, I got to do it on my own. he gets all pissed, which tells you exactly what's going to happen later in the episode. The numbers game is obviously going to catch up with him. I do think that makes a good out for Orange Cassidy to lose, probably. I hope it's a one-on-one match, but maybe he gets beat down before or whatever. But this was another thing that, like, he just said Wheeler Yuta's name like 3 times in a row. And I was like, this just doesn't sound like how a human being talks a little bit. Like, I'm going to make an example out of you, Wheeler Yuta. And John Moxley, I'm going to worry about you Saturday. But tonight, Wheeler Yuta. Like, it was just like a little bit odd. But any thoughts you have on that? It was kind of a standard promo otherwise.
No, I don't think I have too much to talk about on that. We can talk about more of that when we get to the match.
We can talk about more of that when we get to the match. But for now, we'll move on to Chris Statlander versus Shida. This match was really, really good. This was a refreshing one for Shida. She had a couple of rough outings, I felt like. But she looked great in this. Chris Statlander always looks great. Shida hits hard. Chris Statlander is extremely strong. It's pathetic that we only get one women's match a show, but at least this was not in the 9:30 slot, and it was over 9 minutes long. So good and bad with that. But Chris Statlander intercepting the katana and hitting that Saturday Night Fever for the win. And post-match, we get a promo from Mercedes, the CEO.
Oh, I'm just gonna sit here with my broken arm and be your heavy.
Oh, okay. Camille, thank you. But we do have Mercedes coming out to dunk on the Sixers, which made me sad that Ryan wasn't here because she went after Philly pretty hard as a Celtics fan in this, but. She says she's not often impressed by competition, but she was with Chris Statlander, and I really like that. I like it when heels build up their opponents so that when they beat them later, it means something. She also says that her TBS title reign is longer than the one that Chris had, and she's not going to lose at Full Gear because she's the greatest TBS champion of all time. Conveniently just leaving Jade Cargill out of that equation, but that's okay. And Mercedes sends a one-armed Camille in a sling in to beat up both on Shida and Statlander, who team up to dump Camille to the floor, but Mercedes kind of sneak attacks things until Chris Statlander hits the Saturday Night Fever. And that's it. That's pretty much all we got from that segment. Very good women's match. Decent little go home. There has not been a match longer than 20 minutes in women's AEW wrestling history. Do we think at this pay-per-view, Chris Statlander and Mercedes Moné get an over 20-minute match? Your thoughts?
I do not.
See, I
think it's like 14 or something.
I think I'm so split on it because this one feels like the one that should be it. But these cards are so fucking juiced all the time that I'm like, it's going to feel so long sitting in the middle of this card. But I also don't know if this is the one that goes that long because I'm not convinced this is the only match out of this that we get. Like they might choose to run this back. But what did you think of what we saw tonight?
I like both. Statlander and Shida was a nice little treat to have this match before the pay-per-view. It's always fun when you have these kind of two faces go against each other, which, you know, just kind of, you know, test their metal. I actually thought, you know, with two faces going off against each other, I was expecting Mercedes and Camille to interfere and have a no contest match because, you know, it's a go-home match, right? So I was pleasantly surprised they gave Statlander the win to give her momentum. And also continue the story of Shida, you know, having confidence issues in her katana.
Yes.
As someone who's also had confidence issues with his own katana. you're a little afraid to pull the trigger sometimes, but
sure.
So I'm interested to see what that does to her going forward. If that changes her persona much.
Yeah, I'm also intrigued to see what this road to dissension between Camille and Mercedes looks like. Like, where that's going is how slow that burns, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is something that intrigues me quite a bit. But backstage, MVP is back on camera, and he invites the camera to follow him, and they see Swerve. Shelton Benjamin grabs him, but it's not Swerve. MVP still hits him in the gut, though, which is, with his cane, which was pretty great. So this was perfectly fun. I like that it made Swerve look smart. And we also get a segment that has Bobby Lashley with MVP and Shelton. No chain shot is going to stop them. We'll skip over the Switchblade and Adam Page segment that we get really quick just to keep the fluidity of all of this going. But poor Cheeseburger. We love Cheeseburger around these parts, all right? The world famous CV, Ring of Honor standout, hugely over. Very nice to see him get the reception that he did in the Reading, Pennsylvania area. But he was there to be fed to Bobby Lashley, who has his in-ring debut, I believe, right? That was his first in-ring match?
Yes.
Yes, good stuff. I'm excited to see him stretch his legs a little bit more than he did in this, but he squashes poor CB and also Joe Keys putting a hurt lock and Keys dead. R.I.P. Keys. Bobby Lashley looks incredible. The spear to him was awesome. He just made mincemeat out of Cheeseburger, as my boss said. But they actually are both very good at doing their job in this regard as well. But I'm so excited for this. Was a great appetizer for what's to come in the pay-per-view, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my only note was it was a value meal of a match with Cheeseburger and Joe Keys.
Bobby the Shiners.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad Cheeseburger didn't, you know, have to take the hurt lock. At least he got spared.
He did get spared the hurt lock. Sign ROH. Sign Cheeseburger back to ROH and let him do what he's capable of, please. He's so good. So there was a quick promo package for Switchblade Jay White and Hangman Adam Page. This one is an interesting one pay-per-view wise because I feel like it could go either way. Like, I think Hangman could even the score, but Jay White getting a second win on him would just drive him fucking crazy. So this is one that I could actually see going either way, and I appreciate that about it because there's a lot of things that just feel very predictable on these sort of more intermittent pay-per-views, especially coming up on the C2. So I'm glad this feels like it can go either way. What did you think of the video package, and what way do you think that match is going to break?
Video package is good. I like the build. And as far as the match, this is a tough one. I think you could do more for Jay White, like you were mentioning. Especially, like I said, going to the C2, I think if he could beat Hangman and then go into the C2 and have a run, kind of similar to what he had last year, and make it to, you know, maybe make it to the final or something, I think that'd be huge for him. Where Hangman, he doesn't need to be necessarily in those kind of spots with his character and the way he is. He can have fun matches of being a lunatic and being out of his mind and being broken. So I think Jay White winning would be a win-win for both of them.
Well, no, it would be a loss for Hangman, idiot. No, I'm just kidding. I know what you're saying on this, but I agree. Like, I think Hangman devolving more into madness could be really, really fun. I'm so intrigued to see. There's the value of Hangman Adam Page right now seems as high as it's ever been, and I'm really excited about that. And I'm so intrigued to see if he ends up in the Continental Classic and has like a really unique run to that whole tournament, or if he's just completely adjacent from it because he doesn't really need like a work rate way back to a title path. You know what I mean? Like that doesn't feel like what we need there. But Okada versus Hangman is something that would definitely intrigue me. So, and I'm kind of intrigued to see what happens there. Jay White, I'm wondering, like, if he, like, he's someone I want to see against Okada. If the dream is true that Kenny Omega's back, Jay White and Kenny should face each other at some point. Maybe both pull out of their respective blocks, because both of them getting back to Okada would mean so much. Like, so I don't want to see a ton of people that weren't at last year being it this year, but that one kind of feels like that could be really cool for Switchblade. Do you think either of these guys move on to the C2? Because I think Jay White wins if one or both of them do. I think Adam Page wins if they're going to do something separate of it and make it a best out of three.
I think if I had my choosing, I would choose Jay White to be back in the C2.
Yeah.
Hangman to be on the outside of it.
I'm with you on that. And also, Hangman, if you're on Blue Sky, which is a much friendlier app than some of the other ones out there, you'll know that Hangman has really important things to do, like tend to his garden and tell you all that leaves are plants. So he's got a lot going through his very demented little head at this moment. And I think it's important that we honor and respect all of it. So,
I mean, wasn't he a PE teacher?
He was. Imagine like seeing your former gym teacher, or just, he might've just been a general education teacher, but either way, like just like using syringes on television and stuff. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. But I forgot to mention the post-match of our Bobby Lashley versus smooshing cheeseburger into mincemeat. After that, we did have Nana come in with the chair. We had Shelton come up the ramp and MVP with his cane up. They are fully prepared for what's coming. Drive-by kick and a swerve stomp on this. And you have exiting through the crowd, Swerve Strickland staring them down. So I'm intrigued to see what happens there, too. I don't think there's a way that Swerve wins. I think it's either Lashley's to win, or I wouldn't be mad if that went to like a unique time limit draw of some sort. Because I think they want to continue that feud for a while. Your thoughts about the pay-per-view implications? Do you think Bobby Lashley just wins outright? Do you think Swerve pulls one off? Or do you think we go to a time limit here?
I think Bobby wins outright, but I think there's some distractions or some shenanigans. Because, you know, there's a numbers game. And I don't know how that favors Swerve. And with him kind of having upper hand tonight, that's always a kiss of death, right? Leading into a pay-per-view.
It's true. I think a convincing win from Bobby Lashley where Swerve gets to show out would be very cool. I don't think anybody would have a problem with that. But in our women's championship picture, we move backstage with Renee, Mariah May, and Mina Shirakawa. Finally, the champagne celebration is going to happen, it looks like. And at Rampage, they will be teaming up for the first time in 2 years. Mariah says it's her division, no matter where, no matter when, no matter how. Basically, she goes on the Dr. Seuss, like, I will beat you on a boat, I will beat you on a goat. Like, she's going to kick your ass wherever. And Mina will give her a celebration that she'll never forget. And then there's dancing and more titty shaking. So, I feel like Mariah May's reign is getting wasted and they need to have this Mina angle bail it out in a hurry. Your thoughts on the backstage and where this might all be going?
A part of me thinks that maybe we get the return of the retired Toni Storm. I feel like, you know, Mina talking about giving her a celebration she won't forget. When they have some Mina packages stuff, they had some black and white effects to the package. They said Mina is coming. So I thought maybe that was a little Easter egg of Toni. And I to your point, yes, Mariah's reign has kind of been wasted. And I think they even kind of leaned into that with some of her promos talking about how there's no one to wrestle. She's just above everyone else. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of stale. And you have people to wrestle, but I feel like we're just in a weird holding pattern for her.
Yeah, you going to build to any of them at any point would be nice.
I guess Anna Jay had a short little arc. But
yeah, that was one of the better things that they've done. It felt like they were starting to turn that around. But that no DQ match on Collision was quite good. And Harley Cameron, undeniably, absolutely hilarious. And the quickness with which she's picked up wrestling is bananas. Like,
I would have loved to see her come to sliding like behind them and start just shaking.
A drive-by boob shake. I'll take it. That unhinged little weirdo. But we'll move on to Claudio and Darby Allin. And this was one of my favorite Darby Allin matches because he got his ass kicked and lost, which is what usually happens when you get your ass kicked. I feel like Claudio is slowly starting to creep up on people's radars of like, man, we can't waste him like WWE did. He's a trios champion. That's great. He's gotten to look really good. He's held that ROH title, but like, this guy is such a fucking beast. Like, I don't know if you ever saw the Kevin Owens clip from back when they were in like ROH, when he was Kevin Steen, but he's talking about how low key won't lose to anybody and do the job. And he's like, you don't want to lose to me? Fine. You don't want to lose to Al Generico? Whatever. He was like, but Claudio, he's a horse. He's a human horse. And sometimes, i.e. when Claudio is just tossing Darby into a table that doesn't break and hucking him around the ring, and then Darby desperately gets back into the ring and he's like, eat this lariat, bro. All I can hear is Kevin Owens in the back of my head going, he's a human horse. His Canadian accent like 20 years ago. But I like this story because I'm all for die trying Darby Allin, like kill or be killed Darby Allin. He probably wins too much with that style because it doesn't show up enough. Doesn't feel like a payoff when he wins that much, in my opinion. But this sounds so weird to say, one of my favorite losers in the company, because he has this really unique ability to get a crowd so invested in him because of all the insane shit that he does. So they buy into those hope spots. Like when he was crawling back into the ring, this crowd sucked tonight or was mic'd poorly, but you could hear the crowd like rally behind him. And then when Claudio just put him out and he lost, they like a vacuum sucked the joy out of the room in the way that it was designed to, I think, in a really, really good way. So Darby, just a phenomenal at selling Claudio. He's a human horse. he's just so impressive every damn time I see him. I love the viciousness. I loved him throwing him into the garage door last week. This was good shit, man. I have no complaints about this.
Yeah, Darby will forever be the underdog that anyone. I don't, even if he was ever a heel, I don't know if he could be a heel, because he'll always be an underdog that people will root for. And like I said, they'll buy into all the hope spots and all the chaos. The Claudio thing, I noted that he's one of those wrestlers where 20 years from now, when you're talking about wrestling and it's like, hey, you remember so and so from back, you know, this era? And someone's gonna be like, remember Claudio? And like, oh yeah, that guy, he was a horse.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's gonna be one of those guys and people like maybe don't think off the top of the mind, but when people remember him, they're like, oh yeah, that guy, like he was the best like pound for pound wrestler for his size and strength and everything else. He had it all. And probably wasn't ever fully used like he should be throughout his career. But the match itself between him and Darby, I didn't realize it was their first time in a singles match, so that was fun to note.
That very much was.
And I thought they worked really well together, the size versus, you know, Darby's, you know, fast speed. I thought that was a really good, fun story to tell. And I just like when Claudio wrestles small guys and he can really show out with his strength, when he's wrestling a Darby or when he's wrestling, you know, one of the lucha wrestlers or something.
Yes. There's something really fun, like I love Claudio as a face because I like rooting for him. And the swing is always really impressive and stuff. But when he's a heel, fuck. Like, he's one of those guys that you're like, man, watch out. Watch out. And he's not the type of heel that you're like, if I saw him walking down the street, I would cross the street. Like that. He doesn't have like the Brock Lesnar thing. But he's like one of the ones that the second they get in the ring, you're like, it's fucking over for the other guy. So really, really fun. His ROH title reign, it was so annoying that he was never on ROH. But like, I love this violent heel stuff. He's killing it with. But like, dickhead coffee drinking elitist heel. Really good shit. Really good shit. I hope he gets a chance to shine. A quick backstage with Private Party and Renee and what was... I thought this was actually really fun. Some personality really shining through for these two here, saying that the odds are stacked against them in this, but the odds are always stacked against them. And I just love that Renee asks what their strategy is. And there, more people should just say, why would I publicly reveal them? Like,
my strategy is to win and not lose.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you. Come on now. And then you have some stuff with the Costco guys, and much like you, I don't know anything about them. I just don't. I'm not even like, it's not that I'm a Costco guys hater. I don't.
I get so lost in their eyebrows. Like, all I can focus on is their eyebrows. Like bug eye, like eyebrows. Like,
boom. That's all I know about them is that.
Like chocolate chunk, whatever, cookie, like.
Double chocolate chunk or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even have a Costco membership. So I'm like way behind on all this. So. I don't even know where my local Costco is, but a lot of people have very strong opinions on this. It's a pre-show match against QT Marshall. I really don't think the world is going to end because of it. So, but the big thing out of this is the Rizzler is going to be the ring bell person. So that's neat. That is neat, I guess. QT Marshall also releasing a diss track was pretty great. He says he doesn't buy detergent because his stains, or he doesn't buy paper towels because he never spills. So that that got me pretty good. Some more of you in the chat. Thank you, 1LT Photo, for hanging out with us. Jamie from Pario Magazine. Go check out his stuff. He has some really great interviews. He did a throwback to his Will Ospreay interview the other day. Good shit. He's one of our Aussie friends. He deals with all my TMDK love. As much as anybody else does. So, but we will move on here. We get a recap of the Danny Garcia, Matt Menard stuff, which was so good. Extremely well done. We get some footage after the fact where Jack Perry is tied up in a chair and Garcia pours water on him. And then he just kind of bitches out. Which I get, because Danny Garcia is the face, but I'm just thinking if it's Hangman Page, he lights that man on fire. So they kidnap him, they tie him up. I do like Jack Perry taunting him. He's like, do it. Fucking do it. You won't. And he's right, but Danny grabs a tire iron and feigns hitting him, but smashes the headlight on the bus instead, and Matt Menard follows him out. To your point, very weird that they did this, and then Danny Magic was just on commentary like that. That created some stilted flow in this, but very, very well produced, very, very well done. I think Danny Garcia is probably going over this weekend. I think it's his time. I don't think you can build more adversity for Danny Garcia than you already have. The only way he doesn't, I feel like, is if he wins the Continental Classic to complete that character arc that he started this time last year. But I feel like with Okada, there's too many people with such a rich history with Okada in this... Like, if Kenny's back, Switchblade, like, you can have Danny Garcia win this title and bring it to a new level that it hasn't been at in a while, I think. Do you think he's going over at the pay-per-view?
I think it would make sense to get the title off of another member of the Elite and to kind of move on from the transition from that. This whole vignette stuff has been fun to watch. I think some, like, the camera work, whether it's... the Jack Perry Garcia stuff or the MJF stuff. I like some of the camera work they've been doing. The Jack Perry and Garcia thing, I watched it, and all I can think of is, like, we're pretty much playing out the Dark Knight where Jack Perry is the Joker riding around the truck, trying to antagonize Garcia, who's playing Harvey Dent, where he's, you know, has to either die a hero or live long enough to see himself become a villain. That's the story I'm seeing play out between those two.
I like it. I like your Dark Knight comparison. Well played. Kind of makes me want to go watch The Dark Knight. Kind of makes me excited for this match. Not going to lie. So, well done. Apt comparison from Asian Joe. Well, guys, we're coming down the home stretch a little bit. Please leave a thumbs up if you haven't already. Also, get out your blankets. Get out your warmest pajamas. Get out your space heaters, because hell has frozen over. I found Chris Jericho very entertaining tonight on my own television. We have a contract signing. And this I'll admit, always pops me with Jericho. When he starts a segment just by grinning like an idiot, and it goes on for way too long, I'm in. When it doesn't go on way too long, I'm like, eye roll. This actually fucking got me. And he says he's not putting pen to paper yet for this match for his ROH title. He's going to have his legal eagles. Breaking news. Kate likes the Jericho segment. He's going to have his legal eagles take a look at it. And he walks away with the contract, and Ishii is just stalking him and not breaking at all. God bless that man. He's just following behind him. Jericho puts a trash can between the two of them. Just keeps moving on. At one point, Jericho's side eyes of like, why is he still following me, are so fucking good in this. He's pulling security between them. He's doing everything he can. Finally gets to the ring and he says, well, I can't. I don't have a pen. Like, he's at a car accident scene and you go to exchange insurance information and nobody has a pen, but Ishii has a pen, and he's like slasher horror villain coming at him with the pen, and it's so good. But then Big Bill and Brian Keith ambush him. It seems like this was all a ruse, but the numbers game evens out with Mark Briscoe and Rocky Romero who clean house. Jay Driller by Briscoe to Jericho. Feels like this New Wave title reign is just to probably have Jay Briscoe win it back after the C2, maybe. I don't know. But I don't think anyone was like, you know what we need is a Jay Briscoe versus Jericho trilogy. This is the most entertaining thing that they've done in a while. Definitely the most entertaining thing that they've done in a while. For me. What did you think?
Initially, I thought it went a little long with the whole following thing. I think it would have been almost more effective and more fun to have it segmented through the show, like, you know, here's like a couple minutes, and then like later on, you see Jericho running, walking down the hallway in the backstage for like a couple seconds, and then you see Ishii slowly trailing him, just kind of periodically through the show. I think it would have been fun to kind of stretch it out a little bit instead of doing it all in one chunk.
I can see that. That could be fun.
I enjoyed the whole like Ishii stalking him like Michael Myers, you know, just like the slow, I don't have to break stride, and you're going to like stumble. But we should have known something weird was going to happen, because you never start a contract signing in a locker room. That's just weird.
That is weird. That was a weird place to hold it. They probably should do more of them there, but that was an odd one. That was an odd one. I laughed. That's the first time I can say that about Chris Jericho in a very long time. But we move on to Jamie Hayter, who wears my hair color way too well, so I'm going to just go back to being blonde, because that's upsetting how good she looks with this 70s copper hair look. Unfair. But she says she doesn't really know what Julia's deal is with the way that she got interrupted last week, that she marches to the beat of her own drum, and she can certainly respect that. And then we have Julia cutting in again, and this week it felt a little smoother, like everything was just like a little bit more intentional with it or something. The colored bars that go up whenever there's a technical error on a television, like things like that, I think helped the production of this. But another fantastic Julia Hart vignette airs, trying to get her to come home. Love Brody King with the voiceover, but this is this is good stuff and a great return program, I think, for Julia Hart, assuming that's where we're going with this. I'm very happy that we have a bona fide babyface and Jamie Hayter back who can work like she does, because kind of thin on top babyfaces with Willow out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Julia back. I think because she adds so much to the division. She was really kind of ascending to the top of the title picture when, before she got hurt. So having her back in there when, you know, we need more challengers for the world title, whether it's, you know, after Mariah May loses it to whoever she's going to lose it to, having Julia back would be nice. And I've just been kind of confused by these little vignettes or these little videos of Julia, because they act like she hasn't been injured, like she just went missing. So I'm confused by like where she went and why she, you know, needs to come home, and she's having this whole, you know, back and forth between the cheerleaders to scary witchy woman. So I'm just a little confused of, like, you know.
She became the Judas in the Judas in her mind. I don't know what you're not getting about that, but
that makes sense.
She's beautiful on the inside, but yes.
That is some excellent Kate Splatton.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Just thought of that right now. Was not ever a Jericho theme song. So we move to our main event, and boy, this match was a lot of fun. Orange Cassidy and Wheeler Yuta, really good shit. There was some stuff that when Orange Cassidy turns it up a notch, you just start to see how deep his well is of moves that he busts out. Like, I think a lot of people learn that. I know I'm biased to most things ZSJ, but that ZSJ Orange Cassidy match, I think people started to see, like, oh, and I think most people were gravitating away from, like, he's the guy with his hands in his pockets nonsense, but, like, he's a really fucking good wrestler, and we get to see that sometimes, and then we get to see it on another level. I felt like tonight was one of those where we just got to see him do some different stuff in this, but we have Yuta shoving Bryce Remsburg and going outside to get a chair. He misses the shot, and Orange Cassidy catches him with a roll-up for the win. Not always a huge fan of roll-up wins, but when done right, like this one does, I'm fine with it. Like, this looked like he had an opportunistic moment to get a win, as opposed to, I'm an idiot that got distracted by something on the outside for 20 seconds and somebody rolled me up. So this was great. These two obviously know each other extremely well. Wheeler Yuta actually get some time to show out instead of just being the whipping boy of the Death Riders. Really good shit. Like, he's a fantastic wrestler. So I thought this was a fun way to end the show. And then, of course, we get him post-match beatdown, duct taped all around. Because he's a babyface, he's an idiot and voluntarily chooses to not have his friends out there. But they beat the crap out of him. You do have the rest of the locker room kind of eventually emptying out here a little bit. Conglomeration shows up as the Death Riders leave. Kyle O'Reilly cutting Orange Cassidy free from the tape and giving him his sunglasses back, which is the most important part. But Dark Denim Orange Cassidy, still extremely serious. Very, very, very fun match. I really liked what we got out of this. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm glad we had a clean finish, kind of like we did with Darby and Claudio, because with those storylines, I'm not ever quite sure if we're going to get interference by the rest of the Death Riders or not.
Sure.
Having a definitive winner before the pay-per-view is nice. I liked the story they were telling early on with Wheeler, you know, being so resentful and vicious and angry, and Orange just trying to, you know, get the win and not have to go to that place. But as the match kind of progressed, he got a little bit more vicious, I guess. So I enjoyed seeing that out of Orange. I, like you mentioned, seeing him go, I mean, a guy doesn't wrestle for as long as he does and not be able to go in the ring. And I think I like the fact that the people who had issues with him and his, you know, the sloth character and all that stuff. You know, I can't imagine what they'd say now watching him do what he's doing right now in this iteration. Yeah. So it's so much fun to watch him play and with more passion and just going in the ring. And then he still has the defiant part of, you know, at the end where he's hand dust taping, does his little shin kicks to Moxley and then eats the right hand. I mean, it's fun when he still has that aspect in him.
Agreed.
But it's not the dominating part of his character right now.
Yeah, no. It's like, it also, I like that it gets under Moxley's skin, because that's been something that's been true their whole character arc, I think. Now it's just turned up, like, because Mox is super heel. So I think this is good. I think this is fun. A strong way to go home to the pay-per-view. So we will see what is to happen here. But that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for hanging out with us in the chat. We appreciate you. Chatting along with us, Jesse Ozog, 1LT Photo, Jamie, Scott George. Pieces was in here earlier. More people at the beginning of the show, too. You guys showing out for us. Tim McFowell all night. Thank you so much for being here. Kylie was here earlier. You guys rock and you roll. Very much appreciated. Taylor Cannon was in here at the beginning. So thanks so much. But we're going to spare you everything but the delicious plugs for Joe. We kind of plugged all my stuff at the beginning of the show, talking about my own YouTube channel, talking about all the nonsense I do at Fightful. But Joe, where can the people find you? Because we're both on the Sky now as well.
We are, but most of my social media is at _AsianJoe, but on Blue Sky is just at AsianJoe. But follow me there. Find me there. I think I have my links to my serial review blog and a couple of my social media bios. I don't think I added it to my Blue Sky one. But anyhow, follow. You can click on that, read about some serial reviews if you want to. Otherwise, I'm here on Wednesdays most times. So
there you go. There you go. I'm every Wednesday because I'm the most consistent person on the show. Definitely have not been out for weeks at a time before. That's literally never happened. So it's really just Ryan running from the grind. We hope that he continues to feel miserable from his stomach virus, and I hope the Flyers lost. So
he was sick. Like, you know, like when you're in elementary school, like, I'm sick, I can't go to school, but then all of a sudden you're magically fine when you want to go, like, go to your friends for a sleepover.
Yeah, all of a sudden he's better for the Flyers game. Sus. Very sus, but we're done in an hour and 20 minutes, so that's what happens when he's not here. So thank you guys so much for watching. Please follow us at Mark Order Pod on socials. We kid about Ryan, but he does a great job running those for us. We're also on Blue Sky on the brand account as well, so check us out there if you're looking for a little bit friendlier of an environment to chat in. And yeah, we will see you post the pay-per-view next week. We'll have the fallout from Full Gear then. We say goodbye and a good night.
And I'll do my Ryan thing where I say, here's my overlay.
There you go.
And I will find the outro music here as I scroll.
Nailed it.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Join the Mark Order.